Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina and Cullman, Alabama. This is the Sorcerer's Dictionary. I'm Dr. John Stamey, and we're going to have an absolutely wonderful, wonderful talk tonight. We've got our buddy Josh McClendon is here with us. We've got a neat topic. Josh, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, John. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm glad to be here. We just had our, because yes, I have a day job, and we just had our Christmas party, the most wonderful food in the world. And it was a great time. I brought home a bunch of food and all these nice presents. My boss, I sell life insurance, and it's really fun. It's a great job, and I work with great people. So it was a nice evening, but I was really looking forward to the Sorcerer's Dictionary. I really was. This is a high point in my life, and especially in my weeks, and it's great to be here with you. You're really a knowledgeable guy, and I've been watching the postings that you put on Cullman Cabal, and you got some great stuff there, and I would invite everybody to go like Cullman Cabal and take part in what Jason has got going on there. It's really cool. So tonight we're going to talk about a chapter in a very special book called Financial Sorcery by Jason Miller. Now, I tell you what, you, Jason, we got two Jasons going on here. You, Jason, do what?
Oh,
what
I
did
just
you say?
Was I didn't say anything. I was just laughing
okay. At
the two Jasons.
Yeah, we have two Jasons. So you, Jason McClendon, showed me when we first started this podcast, you showed me a couple of books. Both of them were by the other Jason, Jason Miller. And one was Financial Sorcery. I had seen a picture of that book cover on your Facebook page, and I was really interested because I happen to be a certified hedge fund professional, and I'm, I guess, as close to a professional investor as you can get. And I was really interested to see what the take is on financial sorcery. I think it could be quite important. So what I'd like for you to do is give us an overview of what is financial sorcery. And then I'll tell you a couple of stories that I've got that might be of interest. Then we'll look at the altar that I put together. So tell us, Jason McClendon, a little bit about financial sorcery in the book and what's it all about.
All right. Well, the book itself gives not just magical, but also really common sense sort of ways of managing your finances. What it's all about is not just doing spells or anything to get little lump sums of money here and there, but ultimately about taking control of your own finances and using magical and regular everyday mundane methods to do so. It presents the idea of money as a spiritual entity that has certain protocols, much like a spirit from any other grimoire that you would work with has protocols for working with them, things that they like, certain behaviors, and, you know, working tools and other things that go along with working with those spirits to form a healthy relationship. The spirit of money works in the same way. There are protocols and different things spirit of money enjoys and the way that the spirit of money works. And using the techniques of financial sorcery is using these protocols and strategies for using them to better your relationship with the spirit of money in your life.
Now, all right, now I'm going to stop you, and I've got to ask a question. This is an important one. Describe the spirit of money. Can you do that?
I'll do my best. There is a chapter in one of the New Testament Gospels. I can't remember where it's at, but Jesus says that you cannot serve both God and mammon. and, you know, serving, you know, when we think of serving mammon, you know, when you serve something or someone, you don't control, you know, it has more control over your life. You don't really control the situation. When I say the spirit of money, the kind of like is this idea of a spirit being like a ghost, but spirits and entities and energies, you know, if you look into some of the different philosophies, like the Neoplatonic philosophy that has the different layers of reality, and you when you go up these spheres and you get into things like the mathematical and conceptual reality, there are things that we would think of as concepts, but in this philosophy, these concepts are seen as living entities. For example, you think of the spirit of fear. You know, fear is an emotion, but, you know, it has, you know, a functionality. It has almost a life of its own. It behaves in certain ways. We experience its presence through, you know, threats and things that, you know, ultimately pose a threat on our life and our happiness. So when I say the spirit of money, this is somewhat what I am referring to is there is this sort of invisible force that has its own sort of behavioral patterns that can be understood as existing in one of these higher spheres of a more conceptual reality, something more abstract, but not any less alive than you can say that you and I are. And this kind of comes from the panpsychist or idealist philosophy of viewing the world and consciousness.
Okay, now you said mammon. Now, not everybody on our podcast knows what mammon is when you said you can't serve God and mammon. So just, you know, kind of review that for some of us that might not know what that is.
Yeah, it refers to money. It's a Greek word, I believe, in the Greek New Testament that it refers to money in a lot of older cultures from that area. The word mammon was used in this spiritual sense a lot, but it ultimately refers to money, to you know, wealth, you know, gold, silver, you know, what we use as transactional tool.
Right, exactly. And I would like to step in here and share a couple of things that I have found out over the years. Like, one is that if you treat money as an object, you never seem to have enough. If you treat money as something you just squirrel away, there's never enough money. But if you use money as a tool to create jobs and to create wealth, then you've got more money than you could ever need.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's something that goes through Western philosophy a lot, and that's why hoarders never do any good. They never have enough money. But when you have your money working for you, it works too, and it takes some of the load off your back. So that's a very important thing about money, is you've got to keep it working. It's like insurance, okay? As we know, I sell life insurance. And there was a book that came out. I can't remember what the name of the book was. It's a really good book. And it talked about the fact that the more money you have, the more insurance you need. Now, why is that? Because you don't need to be self-insuring. So if something happens to you, you don't need to be paying that out of your pocket. If it's like going to a nursing home or death or whatever, you don't need to be paying that. You need to have somebody else, that life insurance company or that health insurance company, paying for those problems, because you need to keep your money free so that you can keep reinvesting it and making it work. And once you think about it, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
That does.
And so
it's,
the more you keep
really
your money working for you, the more you keep your money working for you, the more money you really have, because it's always making more money. I mean, I invest.
Right.
And I actively invest in things that are, you know, that I think are going to do well, and I invest in collectibles. And my money is working for me because, like, at the end of this year, I'll total up the current market value of things that I have, and I already know it's going to be higher than it was at the end of last year. So I keep my money working for me. And that's what people need to do. Now, I want to switch topics because I've got one of the most interesting experiences that I ever had was at my last house. It was on Hillsborough Drive, and I was out jogging, okay? It was one evening, about 6:30. It was in late November. It was already daylight savings time. It was getting dark. And let me ask you something. I've never asked you a personal psychical experience question. Have you ever been overcome with somebody's spirit who is deceased?
Not that I can recall.
Okay. Well, I was studying. I had just passed my certified hedge fund professional certification, and I was out jogging, and I was overcome by the spirit of J.P. Morgan. Now, a lot of people know who J.P. Morgan is. First of all, in the game Monopoly, J.P. Morgan is portrayed as Mr. Moneybags because he was Mr. Moneybags. He was truly the richest man in the world. And you know what's interesting? Even though he is dead, J.P. Morgan is likely still the richest man in the world. His spirit is alive. And what I found out, and I never thought about it before, he is the only man whose name is on two New York Stock Exchange corporations. There's J.P. Morgan Chase, the huge bank, and then there is Morgan Stanley, the financial brokers. Nobody else in the world can claim that their name permeates two of the biggest companies in the world, and they have no idea or notion to change that, because his name is synonymous with wealth and good financial practices. So, you know, they've said the name Morgan stays. And it's very interesting. I experienced his spirit. It was gigantic. It was as big as the sky. And he really and truly is there. I mean, I experienced him, and then that's when I realized that he is still the richest man in the world. He may not be alive, but his estate, his family, and everything, to have two New York Stock Exchange corporations named after you, nobody can claim that. There's IBM's International Business Machine. Abbott Laboratories is Abbott Laboratories, but there are not two companies. So the spirit of money is a very real thing, I believe. And I've had experiences like that, and it's amazing. There's also a philosophy, and this is an ancient Greek thing, that you would get together with your friends and everybody would put in 10%, and they would use that to buy property, buy businesses, and grow wealth for the whole group so that when they died, their families would have wealth. So what they were doing is they were making their money work for them. You know, they would get together and decide, oh, well, we need to buy this property or we need to build this building or whatever. And they didn't have to do anything. The group decided. And the group did it. So that's another example in ancient Greek times that people let their money work for them. And so you know where that 10% ultimately wound up is the notion of tithing in a church.
Yep. And now, it's really interesting.
What?
Sorry, go ahead.
No,
I'll say it's really interesting
It's really interesting all that you bring all this up, as well as in the book, in Financial Sorcery, there's this, you know, speaking of protocols and how to handle working with a spirit, you know, he talks about this, that one of the, that a few of the attributes and the protocols for working with the spirit of money, having money work for you, money likes to move. And if you move the money, if you move the money through the proper channels and in the right way, and that tithing being one of them, you know, then it works in the way that it's supposed to, and it grows.
But if you hoard the money, squirrel it away so that no one can find it, you never have enough. That's like an, that's a permanent rule. And I think, I don't think a lot, I mean, I know a Harvard MBA does not think about money like this, but I think this is a very progressive way to think about it and a very accurate way. You know, I went through a period of my life where I didn't have much money, and I was always worried about, I was always worried about it. Today, I'm not a bit, I'm not rich by any means, but I know what my money is doing. I don't care. I'm fine. I go to bed not worried, and it's a great stress reliever. I know that money likes it when you save it. To a certain extent, you've got to have money saved up. Is that part of the
right.
financial sorcery idea?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, part of the protocols of working with the spirit of money, too, is prioritizing, you know, your spending, sorting out your income and your output of money. And as far as output, that's not necessarily spending on, you know, in or investing in things or anything like that. You know, there's different channels, and having a savings, you know, channel is part of that process. You're paying yourself. You're not hoarding, but if you do it intelligently and wisely, you're paying yourself.
Right. And paying yourself and saving is not hoarding. You have to have a certain amount that you can grab when you need it for emergencies or
right.
whatever. I mean, you know, there, as my mother said, we always made sure that we had $1,000 in the bank, and every once in a while we had to use it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, she was right. That's what my parents, but then the rest of their money, they had their money working for them. My father was, had a good job. He was building houses with partners and everything. So they didn't know about this philosophy of financial sorcery, but they adhered to many of the practices of financial sorcery, which I think is interesting.
Right.
I don't even know why we call it sorcery. These are just good, plain old financial rules that you need to go by. But we'll call it financial sorcery because that's what the book is. That's what Jason Miller did for us, and it's a great book. So, what else have you got for us? What else can you tell us? Tell us a little bit about the spirit of Jupiter and Jove as it relates to financial sorcery. Would you mind doing that?
No, not at all. And it's interesting, too, the seven classical planets, they were attributed domains and certain powers. And Jupiter, Jove, you know, is, of course, really there are other planetary powers that can be used in the practice of magic for financial, you know, for financial means. But Jupiter is the king. And what it comes down to is that Jupiter is about expansion. Jupiter is about growth. Jupiter is about ruling your domain, and that includes ruling the financial aspect of your domain, you know, because you're the king of your world, your universe, but, you know, you have to know how to take control of that universe. And the expansion of Jupiter, that power, it gives you the power to expand your wealth. And the power of Jupiter, it expands your awareness, it expands your abilities to handle that wealth, as well as, you know, just the actual manifestation of the wealth itself. You know, that's what a lot of occultists focus on, is Jupiter's expansive aspect as it pertains to the actual manifestation of wealth itself. But there's so much more to it and how it plays into it all. And it ultimately comes down to being the ruler of your own domain, having charge and sovereignty over your life and your finances.
Okay, now, you shared a story or a couple of stories with me earlier this week about some of the spells that you had used successfully in financial sorcery. Would you mind telling us a little bit about those stories?
No, not at all. This is the big one, and there's this, and Jason talked a little bit about this in financial sorcery. It's more of a strategy of working with magic in general, but he uses it in relation to working with financial magic. And I use this technique in the process of selling our house. We were in some pretty bad debt, and basically what I began thinking was like, okay, we're not managing our money appropriately. So I did a working where you take one of the four tarot suits, you take the ace of that suit and the element that it corresponds to whatever it relates to in your life that you're wanting to either enhance or weaken, depending on what you're trying to do, and you meditate on it in the morning for about 5 minutes for about a week. I did that with the ace of pentacles, pentacles being the suit of earth. Earth is associated with material wealth. And so I did this meditation in the morning. I want to manage my finances better. So I did this meditation to increase my the energy in my sphere as it relates to the element of earth and my finances. And when I did that afterwards, suddenly I started getting all these messages from people about cryptocurrency. And now I'm not some cryptocurrency preacher or whatever. I just thought that it was interesting, and it piqued my curiosity into investing in general. So I began researching the stock market, real estate, and it was almost like I just started downloading this information, and just started things that I didn't understand before all started to click into place, and I was like, oh, this makes sense. And then a friend of mine suggested, you know, that we sell our house, and he didn't suggest this in any, like, we had discussed financial stuff, but his suggestion to sell the house didn't come from anything that had to do with money. It was more of a personal freedom, being able to move around and things like that. So, and I considered it, and then I had talked to some people at work about it, and then they started telling me, oh, yeah, right now is the best time to sell. It's a seller's market right now, like crazy. And started telling me stories of people that they knew who were selling their house. So then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, we should look into this. And so I began talking to my wife about it. And, you know, after a little bit of talking about it and, you know, planning it out and everything, we decided, okay, yeah, we're going to do this. And when we put our house up for sale, you know, we had some things wrong with our house. And no one was really wanting to buy it for the price that we were asking for. And, you know, when the inspections were coming back, people were like, I don't know about this. And so we were having a tough time selling it. So we listed it as is. And then I decided to do an invocation of one of the 72 Shem HaMifrash angels. They're angels that are based off of the 72 names of God from Kabbalah that is taken up from a verse in Exodus. And these angels have powers over certain things in creation. And I began working, and they rule different signs. I think there's like, I don't want to get my math wrong here. There's 72 of the Shem HaMifrash angels, and there are six angels ruling each sign. So that in each sign of the zodiac. But without getting too deep into all of that and the details of all of it, I just wanted to give enough information to kind of give an idea of what I was working with here. But I began working with this angel named Pa Yell. And Pa Yell is said to basically grant you whatever desire you wish. And he's ruling in a certain degree of Capricorn, which is has to do with physical manifestations. And so I began working with this angel, and I asked that he would bring a buyer for our house. It was an 11-day invocation ritual. About 3 days after I had finished the last day of the ritual, we had an offer. They went through with buying the house, and things started to move really quick.
Now, the house was sold as is, right?
Yes.
Crucial.
Yes, it was sold as is, and they did look at our inspection report because we had a personal inspection done, but even afterwards, they still went for it, and they were ready to get moved in and everything, and they were in, as I had asked Payel, I asked for him to send an eager buyer, and they were eager. They wanted the house, so I thank Payel for, the work that he did. It was really amazing. But then we had, and this is kind of like where it comes into the idea in financial sorcery of macro enchantments and micro enchantments. This was the macro enchantment, the big working, selling the house and getting our debt paid and everything. The micro enchantments were the little things that were done to help other aspects of this whole process. Now we had to find a place to go. So we had to scour around for places that were for rent. We weren't having much luck. So I do regular spiritual offerings to the local spirits in my area each morning and my guardian spirits. And whenever I do this, typically it's just kind of a communion thing. But then sometimes I ask for favors. And if they require something, which one of them did ask for something different than usual, which was marzipan, but I was, more than happy to supply the marzipan for this, request. And the request was that they would allow, because no one, in the real estate world, if I tell someone, it's like, yeah, we can move in, but it's going to be on this date after we close, they've already got several people wanting to rent their places. And they're going to want who can get the money into their hands the fastest, who can get the money in their pocket first. And so, we didn't really have that advantage. So I requested that they would grant favor, and the people that we were talking to, that they would, listen to our request and understanding, and we would give them the money when we closed on the house, which happened. And then we talked to our current landlords, and then the spirits that I was working with gave me a flash of insight from this other book that I had on different magical techniques. And when I got this flash of insight, I saw a certain page about servitors and sigils. And I got a flash of insight that basically told me, hey, we have a certain agency. Certain spirits are better at doing certain things than others. You also have your own agency. In this current situation, it would be best for you to use this method for the stuff that you're trying to accomplish. And so I was like, okay. I went to that page that I saw in my mind and began reading through the technique. And interestingly enough, the very first example on the page was the example of moving to a new home. And so then I was like, okay, yeah, got the confirmation there, going to do it. So then, and this is after, I did this right after we had already looked at the house that we were going to be moving into. And they said they had some other people that were looking at it as well, and that they would get back with us when they had made a decision. So I was like, okay, I got the confirmation here, so let's do it. And then I made some sigils based off of the techniques in the book on the page, and I made a little I shuffled four different sigils that represented different aspects of the working to get us moved into this house. And as I was doing the working, I lit my offering candle and the incense, got the drink offering, the coffee that I offer to them, and I invited my spirits guides to work with me while I did this working with the sigils, and I charged each sigil with my attention before lighting it in the fire of the flame of the candle and putting it into my mortar and pestle bowl to burn into ash. And once I had done this with all four sigils that I had made by the method shown to me in the book, I brought the bowl, the mortar and pestle, outside. I got some of the ashes that had been mixed up from the different sigils that had burned it down into in the mortar and pestle bowl, and I spoke, "So I speak it, so it shall be." And then I blew the ashes into the wind, went inside, went back to my altar table, was quiet for a moment, and then I gave my spirit guides the license to depart. Then they went on their way. I concluded the working, and about 30 minutes later, I got a text message from our, you know, prospective landlord saying, "Hey, call us. We've got great news for you." And then we were able to get moved in very shortly after. We sold the house. It went through. We were able to, you know, make the profits that we had wanted off it, that we needed to make this work. And we began paying off our debts. And yeah, things are a lot better. And I, you know, swear up and down now by, you know, these methods, because they do work. They work for me. And I know other people that they have worked for. They haven't done the exact same workings as me, but, you know, there are many different strategies and ways of implementing the different tools that are available in these workings.
Wow, that's a very compelling story. And I'm glad we've got that here on Sorcerer's Dictionary so that people can enjoy that and listen and learn. That's very, I believe that's very important. I really do. So thanks for thanks for telling us that. And tell you what, we've got, I've got one other thing that I would like to share with everybody. If you'll go to our Facebook page, and you will see under the latest post on Sorcerer's Dictionary, you'll see some pictures of my financial altar. I put this together based on Jason Miller's, I don't know why I want to call him Michael. There must be somebody named Michael or an archangel that must be roaming around and trying to put that name in my head. But I've got pictures of what I've got on my altar. And I want to kind of go down his list of what he said that you need to have and what I've got. And it cost me less than $50 to assemble this. And I did it in 2 days. So, I mean, it's enough. It's a no-brainer to put this together to start doing work, to start doing energy work, and to start doing, well, what we'll call sorcery. First of all, Michael says you got to have some incense. Well, I've got incense, and I've got it burning now. Light, I have some candles. Now, he suggests, in Financial Sorcery, the book, he suggests in yellow and green candles. And those are for enlightenment to your clients. So I have yellow and green candles. I found those. Then water. I've got two crystal glasses. One is to be used for water, and then the other one is to be used for libation. And I bought blueberry bourbon in the mini bottles. I thought if any spirit thinks that's cool, I think it'd be great. There's nothing wrong with that, is there, Jason?
Oh, no. Spirits definitely tend to really like liquor. In fact, a certain occultist that I follow used to be a member of something called the Gentlemen of Jupiter's Club. And, of course, they had women involved, too, but they would gather every Thursday in the hour of Jupiter, They would drink fine whiskey and wear their fine suits, and they would say a hymn to Jupiter and pour an offering out. So, that's definitely they like that. They like that for sure.
Okay, well, good. Well, I put one of those mini bottles in the glass so that when I use it, I've got something wonderful. I've got a wonderful libation. So those are the four primary things that Jason Miller says you've got to have to get started with an altar, with a financial altar. Now, the next set of things that he talks about, first of all, Sambalala, the Hindu god of wealth. Now, you may not be able to see it, but if you look the second and third pictures, the second picture I've got is a picture of Sambalala, and got him there, absolutely. You know, the Hindu god of wealth. And then Mary and the miraculous metal. Well, I don't, there's no store around here that sells those miraculous metals. So I had been to the Dollar Tree and I had found some candles with Jesus on them. And I figured, well, that seems okay to me. And one thing that, that Justin Miller says is if you think it's okay to put on your altar, it probably is. Now, you remember that, don't you, Jason?
Yes.
Right. So then says a picture. He has a picture of grandfather who's a great businessman. Well, right underneath, Sambalala, I have a picture of J.P. Morgan, the greatest financier of all time, still with us today in spirit. So I got him. I just found that on the internet and had him printed out for me at Office Depot. Then green and gold candles burning for your clients. I've got those ready to go. The Jupiterian cash box. Well, there's a beautiful cash box that my father gave to my mother from the Philippines, but I can't find it. So what I found is a beautiful old seashell, and I put a $100 bill in it. So that's my cash box. Does that sound okay, Jason, so far?
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, and now a spirit bottle for Marie Laveau and Dr. John, who are the most prosperous voodoo practitioners in New Orleans. We got those. List of goals for the year. Well, the year is almost over, and I am just so close to meeting my financial goals. It's great. So I'll wait until next year to put that up there. And then finally, a Rose of Jericho plant. It's also called the Resurrection plant. Well, there are none in Myrtle Beach. But I got a Christmas cactus because every Christmas there's a resurrection of that and these beautiful blooms. So I figured that's as much of a resurrection as I can find. It's in the spirit. It's in the spirit of the resurrection. So that's what we have. As I said, this all cost me under $50, and I assembled it in 2 days. Anybody can do it. And so why don't you give me your comments on what I've done? Because I had not asked you your comments, and you're kind of the guy that really knows what's going on. Does everything sound okay from what I told you and told everybody on this podcast?
I mean, it sounds good to me, you know, just like he says in the book, you know, your altar is your psychic control panel, and all that you put on it, as long as it is symbolic and meaningful to the goals that you have in mind. And in a lot of the stuff that you've chosen, it already has some deep, I guess you could say, sympathetic meaning in and of itself, you know, like J.P. Morgan, the picture of J.P. Morgan, you're inviting the spirit of J.P. Morgan to partake in your financial goals. And like you said earlier about J.P. Morgan and his spirit and his is almost Jupiterian in itself. He is a spirit of wealth. And so inviting him and his spirit to be a part of, you know, your psychic control panel that you're using to influence your finances, you know, along with like Zambala and, you know, everything else. Yeah, I can see that being very, that is a very good idea. I really like that one. The picture of J.P. Morgan, that's probably my favorite addition that you put on your financial altar.
out of all the things
it's
that
mine,
you put on
it's
in
it's mine
different
too.
Alterations.
He knows how much I respect him. He came to me that one evening, and it was like the whole sky was filled with J.P. Morgan. It was unbelievable. So I have those things happen to me from time to time, and they're wonderful. Well, I just wanted to share that. I'm glad you liked it. And I guess what I'd like to do, we've talked a lot about financial sorcery, and I'd like for you to make any closing comments that you would like to, because I think we've had, how can I put it, a very profitable session tonight, don't you think?
I agree. And
so,
why don't you
close for us and tell us what you think as we end our episode, part one of financial sorcery. Jason, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, really, the biggest thing I have to say is, you know, if you think of money as a spirit and you honor money, you don't serve the spirit of money, but you honor the spirit of money, you like the spirit of money, and you follow the protocols, you know, as some of which we have discussed in this episode, that of working with money and then building a relationship one with money, you will have a fairly prosperous life. I honestly, legitimately, 100% believe that. And I just want to share basically that. Work on developing your relationship with the spirit of money and, you know, following the correct protocols for dealing with money. And, see, the proof is in the pudding. Like, you know, I want to quote Aleister Crowley real quick. He said one time, not to argue or discuss all these things, but let success be thy proof. Take what we're talking about, put it to the test, use it yourself. Let success be thy proof.
Well put.
That's all I got.
The proof is in the pudding, and let success be your proof. That's how you prove things. I know that I was just kind of in competition for a position, and I showed pictures of many of the projects that I had successfully completed, and I got the gig. More on that later. It's a very interesting thing, and I'll be glad to tell everybody as soon as we get everything settled. But anyway, I want to thank you very much. It's really great being on this podcast with you. Will you be back with us next week for more Sorcerer's Dictionary podcast? Will you be back with us?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, thanks. We are too. And this is Dr. John Stamey, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, with Jason McClendon, live from, I can't even think of the name of your town. Help me out.
Cullman, Alabama.
That's right. Sometimes I get so excited I forget. But live from Myrtle Beach in Cullman, Alabama, we're here, and we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Have a great weekend, Jason. You have a good one. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Thank you, John. You have a good week, too.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.